Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 170. This is Kevin DeFrango. On the other end is Ken Phillips. What is up, good sir?
Hey, not too much. Feeling like I'm a, you know, just another week in the unending series of kind of interchangeable weeks that has been this this quarantine situation, I guess. I don't know. We're probably not officially in quarantine, although we may be back into it again from what I am seeing as far as the classifications and the numbers around here.
Franklin County might be back under that in the very near future, under more precautions than we already are. And, yeah, it's making it pretty crazy. Knowing that the CARES Act ends in a couple of weeks is really starting to, I thought I wasn't going to have any heartburn. Now, the heartburn isn't setting in yet, but it's a little bit closer than I'd like it to be. I will put it that way.
if they can get their acts together there in Washington and, you know, pass along some more help there, that would be great.
Yeah.
Of course, there's not a great track record, I guess, in terms of actually getting stuff done in Washington, so.
Yeah, but the first one got passed pretty quickly, so we shall see if... there definitely seems to be a perception problem that may prevent further help.
Yeah, so, fingers crossed on that one.
Yeah, I am very much keeping my fingers crossed because, like, I do feel like we've had some work done at the house here, which, you know... It's not been super expensive stuff, but there's some people that are treating it like, oh yeah, everything's back to normal. I'm like, no, a lot of us still don't have a job, motherfucker. Like, I'm kind of getting annoyed with people at this point, like just from that perspective. It's just like, hey, yeah, no, there are still a lot of us out here that they're kind of just waiting to go back to work. Like, it's not even like one of those, Someone was talking about those bums at home just collecting their money, and I'm like, I would rather have a job right now, sir. That would really be a lot less stressful.
Yeah. I'm not sure. I don't know. When people say ridiculous things like that, it's a very popular opinion in some circles, so.
Yeah.
But... I don't quite understand that one myself. I guess if you really hate your life, you know, and you feel like you need to kind of take it out on somebody else, that's one way of doing it.
If there is that, I suppose. I'm glad I have not personally heard that conversation. you know, none of this is my doing, so it's just like you're like. I just kind of got fucked by the situation.
Yeah.
So what you gonna do? You know, it's
we're all getting screwed in some way.
Yeah, this is, I don't know. It's been kind of fun for me, overall. This whole thing is just kind of, maybe brought a renewed focus back, I would say, for certain things, like the stunt granny. I feel like maybe there were some things moving in the right direction, but hey, when you don't really do as much crazy running around as you used to do, it does allow you to open up in other venues. Which is pretty nice. Between that and all the grilling I've gotten to do because I have a bunch of free time, has been a lot of fun. And as much as I bitch about the lawn work, I'm very happy with how our yard work or our yard looks because of how much time and effort I've put into it.
Yeah, I mean that's what it's all about.
There have been some trade-offs. I'm very happy with the garden. Even though the deer tried to kill the broccoli, I have 3 head of broccoli now. Pretty pumped about that. And that's probably gotten a little extra TLC because we haven't been running here, there, and everywhere as we normally would during a summer. And stuff did grow last year, but I think it's growing better this year because I've had the time to pay attention to it more.
That certainly makes sense. I mean, things are different for everybody, and they're even different for beer companies, for breweries, Kevin.
A very popular topic on here. There is the Belltime beer that is always presented. I really wasn't surprised by the headline of the article from NPR, and I will give a hat tip to site friend Craig Simpson for pointing this story out about what beer sales tell us about the recession. And I was unsurprised to find out that a college favorite, Natural Light, or as everyone lovingly refers to it, Natty Light, is called a sub-premium beer.
Yeah, I liked in this article that they never even referred to it by its right, correct name. Or is it just known as Natty Light now? Did they like lean into that?
I'm not sure. It's quite possible that they just decided to lean into it. I would not be shocked. Because honestly, did you ever really call it Natural Light after the first time that you got it? It made way more sense just to call it Natty Light. And I feel like that's all I see on their cans now, too.
I don't know. They are definitely, they're definitely calling themselves Natty Light in their website here, but it's okay. Also, not that I'm showing them here, but it was coming through on the search results page, but now that I'm actually looking on their website, and this website is terrible. Oh, wait, it's one of those things where I gotta say how old I am.
All the beer sites, almost all the beer sites make you do that.
Okay. So yeah, Natural Light is on the can here, according to what I'm seeing.
Oh, okay.
But, I guess, so this article never refers to them,
as Natural Light.
Yes.
That was pretty, I did kind of get a chuckle, out of that.
And it was interesting to know that, there is a name for that category of beer, quote unquote, sub-premium, is known as in the industry. I wonder, so people must be trying to be sub-premium beers then, right? I mean, they kind of have to know it.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean,
it's like a whole, it's a known category within the business, I suppose.
And there's definitely, I've seen sales of that stuff more recently myself. I don't know how many people I've seen coming out of the grocery store with, two things. Usually some White Claw and then some. I've seen a couple of packs of Natty Light. There was this pink lemonade version of Natty Light that someone bought. It has a flamingo on the label. Are you still on their site?
It was a Natty Light beer?
Yeah, it was a Natty Light. It had a flamingo on it. It's it is either lemonade or I think it's the lemonade light beer. If I'm not mistaken, a pink lemonade, obviously, since there's a flamingo on it.
Yes, it's... I can just see it. It's in the back row, covered up by the beer can in front of it. But yeah, strawberry lemonade.
Strawberry lemonade, beer. Okay.
Oh boy. Yeah, I can't imagine that tasting good.
But yeah, I mean, I guess there's a couple of things to be said here. And this kind of goes back to, yet again, our drinking days that were way more intoxicating than they are now, more times than not. Mm-hmm. I would say was definitely drinking sub-premium beers for the most part. Because I'm not sure that Miller Lite has got to be a sub-premium beer too, correct? Like, because, yeah, like, they kind of talked about it. It's purposely brewed to have low calories. And the problem with the low calories is that you're just taking out taste. Like, I know that it also means you're taking out sugar, which, you know, adds to the calories. But that also gives any beer more flavor.
Okay.
You know,
I was just trying to see if there was a list of sub-premium beers somewhere here. I guess Pabst Blue Ribbon. See, I don't know. They're kind of lumping together the premium and sub-premium here. But there's, yeah, Miller Lite, Coors Light, Pabst Blue Ribbon. I don't know. Budweiser? Would you consider that to be sub-premium?
I guess I'd go with Bud Light.
Bud Light?
Yeah. Maybe Bud Heavy. Bud Heavy is high enough in ABV that maybe it's considered just premium.
But
because it does have a little more flavor to it. Kind of like, I mean, I remember stopping drinking Miller Genuine Draft because it had too many calories in it. Man, we were so young then, we would have burnt the calories off. It would not have mattered what we were drinking.
I guess this article does go on to say that other types of beer have also seen an increase.
Generally, and it's, I guess it's not surprising, stores have seen a large increase. Yeah, 27.5% increase in beer sales in stores. And I mean, yeah, that really is not surprising. I had enough of a stock of beers that I didn't need too much early on. But by the time everyone kind of figured out delivery / pickup, I needed beer, which, you know, I mean, they kind of got that stuff solved pretty quick. There are other, you know, I mean, some of the breweries are still doing the delivery because it's been so lucrative, actually. Been a good source of sales also. But I mean, I guess I'm not surprised that, like, pretty much all beers in store have gone up because people, and I mean, this is just kind of a natural effect, people can't go to the bar. Like, people aren't going to stop drinking.
Well, people are going to the bars, unfortunately, but
well,
people shouldn't be, necessarily. The thing that probably struck fear in me, or disgust, whatever you want us to call it, to see that the hard seltzer group, like White Claw, has increased 246% over last year. Now, I'm assuming they started out from a very low, you know, volume. So,
I can't believe that it's gone up that much just simply because, like, last year it was everywhere by the end of the summer. Because, like, I remember when we went down for the family vacation last year, because we just went down to Georgia. My sister wanted to pick up White Claw. Like, she doesn't really do a lot of drinking at all, so that's a way for her to drink without feeling like she's drinking. You know, she doesn't really like liquor that much. She is definitely not a beer person. And her husband doesn't drink much either. So, like, that kind of fits her. I felt like they were talking about White Claw running out of supplies last year.
Really?
Like, so that's what I'm like, oh my God, like, so, yeah, maybe their production point was just very low last year, and they've kind of realized what their demand is now, and they're keeping pace with it. So, like, I do think it's going to be one of those things that, and the article also mentioned this, that craft beer had kind of started to level off a little bit as far as, like, the growth of it. You know, before this whole recession hit. And this kind of, well, the sales have helped them, the carryout sales have helped, but their main problem is that the craft breweries, they said that they have like 40% of their sales are on site and people drinking at the brewery itself.
Or through keg sales to restaurants and bars. You know, they aren't able to sell as much during this time. So craft beer, yeah, companies are still struggling. Even though craft beer sales are up in the stores, they're still down overall when you can figure in keg sales that they're not making.
And the article kind of also made the distinction that the sale of cheaper beers is up, but it's not up as much as the craft beer sales in stores is up even. It's like 23% or something like that. And the cheaper beers are only up 15%. There is a bigger increase in the craft beer sales still. Like, it's still making gains generally, but it's still not enough to make up the deficit of not having the on-site sales. Because what did they say? It was only like 30% of the beer was retail sales for the Bud Lights and the Natty Lights of the world. they weren't hit quite as hard because more of their sales were cans anyway.
So the trend towards craft beers has continued, I suppose, even during this session here. I still can't get over the hard seltzer thing. I just tried some for the first time this past weekend. My sister-in-law brought some down, and it was like there was literally no way I could finish drinking that can. And I'm normally not that fussy, you know, when it comes to food or drink.
Yeah,
but that, like, even I don't care, you know, how desperate I was to get a buzz. Like, I could not get through that can. It reminded me of the time that I went to, I think, Kroger and got, I don't know where this came from, but there was a bag of chips that was General Tso's flavored.
Oh.
And for some reason, I thought it would be a good idea to try.
I would think it just tastes like a barbecue chip.
Well, I guess I was thinking it would be something similar to that.
Yeah. It did not turn out that way, huh?
They did some type of dark alchemy on those potato chips. I don't know exactly what it was, but they did not taste like General Tso's. They did not taste like anything that you would want to eat or consider food.
Wow.
It was like a bunch of chemicals thrown together. and that's basically how I would describe White Claw. At least the flavor I had.
Yeah, it's one of those ones that I haven't even given it a try at all. And not to be like one of those I hate Nickelback type people, because that's not where this one's going. It's just that it's supposed to be a seltzer, and I don't really like seltzer. So, like, yeah, why am I going to like seltzer if it's flavored? Like, I always remember being offered that a couple of times. they reminded us when we went to Italy, they're like, if you want water, say tap water. Like, you know, they kind of reminded us, if you said water over there, they'd just give you sparkling water. Because that's what everyone drank. And it's just like, no, that stuff is nasty. Like, I guess I just don't want water with bubbles in it. Like, I'm okay with doing pop or soda, as some people say. But, yeah, the hard seltzers, like, that's why I haven't even given it a chance. Like, I'm like, I know I'm not going to like it, so why am I going to try it?
No, you know? I'm more into seltzer. I was willing to give it a shot. I felt like there was a pretty good chance I might actually not mind it that much, but, oh my God.
The taste was like, that bad, huh? Well, and it does help. Like, I know that my one niece likes them because they're gluten-free. So there is definitely a crowd of people that like White Claw, the White Claws of the world, for those reasons.
Not really a factor for me, so...
yeah. It is not a factor for yours truly either. So that makes it easy to maybe not dismiss, but to not worry about. There are enough good beers out there that I don't need to waste my time on something I know I'm not going to like. And they,
yeah.
And I definitely turn down some good, because the times that I do eventually end up having mixed drinks, and it's usually been few and far between, I'm like, ah, man, I really like mixed drinks. Like, I kind of forget about this sometimes. Because there was near the old, at this point, the old boss's place, we met a couple of times at High Bank Distillery after work. And I was like, oh, man, this stuff's really good. And I'm like, I don't drink enough liquor sometimes. But then I just go back to drinking craft beer. And that was one other thing that I was not surprised in this article. They basically said that the buyers of each of these types of beer are just different. You know, they don't really see too many people. I know one person that kind of likes to straddle the cheap beer and the craft beer category, but I feel like most people are either all in on the craft beer at this point, or they're just drinking the you know, either premium or sub-premium beers of the world. Yep. And I don't see too many people changing their taste because they're being squeezed. Like, I guess I'm probably.
And I don't, conversely, I also don't see my dad just suddenly deciding to try us to drink IPAs all of a sudden.
After
a lifetime of sub premium beers.
I would be quite shocked if he decided to start coming in on the IPAs of the world. It would be really weird if my dad, just that late in his life, just decided to take up craft beer. I'd be like, huh? Like, what's going on? Should I be concerned? Is this going to end quicker than I think it's going to?
Well, you know, I just wanted to see what all the fuss was about. I think, you know.
Don't get me wrong. He doesn't mind giving this stuff a try when we take him out and, you know, we're all just kind of hanging out. But he's not really going to get into the scene,
Now, when I think of, Ron DeFranco, I'm not really imagining a bacchanalian-like atmosphere of, you know, total inhibition. But, you know.
Yeah.
You know, beer comes from plants, Kevin.
Yes.
And plants that are grown as crops.
And you might even remember the infamous Super Bowl commercial in which, what was it, Budweiser had the giant barrel of corn syrup?
That they did not want.
That they did not want.
For some reason, someone came with a giant barrel of corn syrup to their castle. I guess there was a door-to-door, giant barrel of corn syrup salesman.
Yes. he was the Ray Kroc of his day, whoever this corn syrup salesman was. I'm just going to throw that out there.
Maybe back when he was trying to sell milkshakes to,
Well, he was just, he was selling corn syrup first, and then he was going to go into the brewing industry, a la Ray Kroc.
Budweiser got in a lot of trouble for, breaking the beer code or something, going after other big-time, I guess, sub-premium manufacturers who are, and it's not like Budweiser is some kind of a saint here. I think they're using, rice instead of...
They use rice, and I always kept on laughing that their commercials said that they only used 5 ingredients, but one of them wasn't yeast, and I'm like, then you don't have beer! Like, you need yeast, you dummy!
They really embarrassed themselves there.
Well, yeah, when you're trying to fight against craft beers and you kind of say something that dumb, come on, man, that's just a level of dumb that you don't need to know, what the attenuation is of a Belgian Abbey ale yeast to know that you at least need yeast to ferment beer. I feel like that's a fairly commonly known thing, so... You just should really say that, and you look a lot less like a big dummy.
Yeah, that's beer 101.
Yes. But yeah, they use rice, too. So, everyone uses some type of filler to try and get... that's one of the reasons why they're so low in calories, too, is that they kind of use a lower caloric sugar. Which isn't necessarily the best for you either. The qualities of sugars in a craft beer and in a sub-premium beer are different things. Even though they're the same thing.
Another reason why people like their kind of beer and probably don't like to shift back and forth very much.
Yeah.
But I was saying, Kevin, and you were agreeing with me, that comes from plants.
you took it back there. I was just talking about the corn syrup to talk about the corn fields.
The corn fields. No, okay.
Yes.
So yes, even lesser beers that the king of beer or whatever, whoever that guy is, I don't know. He doesn't really have a name. The Bud Light Dilly Dilly.
Oh,
guy. Has they retired him? I don't think I've seen him around recently.
I have not seen him in quite some time.
Maybe he's just around for beer. Football season. I'm not sure.
Yeah, that is possible.
Whether you're growing corn, Kevin, barley, hops, or even something you would eat, farmers have a lot of trouble with weeds.
I had talked about at the top of the show my love for my garden that I have put forth. I do not even have the 5,500 acres or 5,500 acres that
that's 5,500 square feet, but
oh,
is that what you're looking at?
Yeah. What did I say?
Acres.
Oh. I guess that is 5,500 square feet isn't that big, but I don't have 500 square feet. So I'm just going to say that if you're growing plants of any nature, the biggest problem is going to be weeds.
Yeah, even if you're trying to grow grass in your yard, weeds are going to be a problem.
This is also true. But trying to keep a bed clean of weeds is a tall task. And, you know, I think this article did a good job talking about how even farmers don't necessarily want to be using some of the pesticides that they do in the United States, but they see them as a necessary evil because they can't get people to work the fields to pull them out.
Yeah, the only alternative would be to have people in there manually pulling the weeds, which is not fun, like you said, in a flower bed. But when you're talking about hundreds of acres, that's really not fun.
Yeah, that is a whole different level that I don't even want to fathom. Because yeah, there's a poop ton in like my 20 square foot. I can only imagine when you have acres of land to take care of how many weeds that's going to create. So yeah, I guess I was kind of surprised almost that they didn't. They're definitely they're trying to create this a robotics engineer, Clint Brower, is trying to create a weed pulling machine to help cut down on the pesticides. And it is also, it seems to be the most effective way to kill the weeds too, to at least be able to mimic the hand pulling of weeds. Because they did say that when people did hand pull the weeds, that it was more effective than the weed killers. Because a lot of the weeds end up becoming resistant to some of the chemicals that are being used. And then you've got to up your chemical game. And if chemical A that was already harmful enough wasn't enough, chemical B that's even more harmful is exactly that more harmful. And it's definitely been linked to a fair share of problems.
And another kind of technique that farmers have used is to till the soil to kill weeds.
Yeah.
So like your farm land might go, have a bunch of weeds on it, and then you go through and till it to kill everything. But apparently that will also mess with the soil and make it less have less nutrients, less soil health. So that's kind of a bad thing as well. And they end up having to use more fertilizer to kind of grow their crops on that soil.
Which
is also not good.
That was one of those things that was a pretty fascinating read for me along that, just because you had heard about, I guess I just feel like when we were in grade school, you learned about, you know, the tilling of the land and how that helped everyone farm back in the day. And to kind of learn that that really isn't the best way to go about things is pretty interesting. And yeah, I guess I didn't really till my land at all. Like, I've mixed in a little bit of extra plant growth in there, or plant dirt in there, specifically for raised garden beds, since that's what I have. But then it's an organic compound. But I guess I don't really till it, and things have grown pretty well in it.
Oh, okay, yeah. I think I'm understanding this a little bit better now. So they're saying that they're realizing that in order to stop using so much of the artificial fertilizers and things like that, they're turning more to no-till practices.
Yeah.
Which is causing
more weeds. Have
problems with weeds, yeah.
Yeah.
So, and now we're seeing, I guess, an increase in the use of these herbicides, I guess, weed killers, which, as you said, some of them are becoming, some of these weeds are becoming immune to them. So, you know, Roundup It's kind of the famous one.
Yeah, which you can, there is a legal case in which you can get money from them because it causes cancer. And people are using these kind of, again, on an industrial level. Like, yeah, right. I would not like to think about that if that was part of my job description.
There's also problems with some of these where they will spread onto, you know, your neighbor's property and maybe kill some of their stuff that they didn't want it to get killed. So the obvious solution here is robots, I would say.
Robots are always the solution, Ken.
But maybe not obvious. I mean, I guess so, Kevin. I agree with you. I always kind of feel like robots are the solution, whether it's, you know, laundry or doing the dishes. Sometimes even cooking, I feel like a robot would be handy for that. But it's pretty impractical for a robot to do any of those things, really, at this point.
Oh.
To like, build a robot and actually have people buy it for their house, you know, to do their laundry, for instance.
Yeah.
It's a very complicated task. There's a lot of, you know, individual steps that you need to do in the right order. And, you know, you have to be able to handle kind of unforeseen events. Like, you know, you drop a piece of clothes, you got to go down and pick it up and put it, you know, robots have trouble with a lot of that kind of stuff.
Right.
But when it comes to this environment in a field with like plants that have been like seeded in exact rows, you know, along a certain plan, it's actually pretty easy for robots to interact with that kind of environment and to, you know, then see, okay, well, this, you know, I'm going to go along here. I'm not going to run over all the plants that we're trying to grow, but I'm going to go cut down all these weeds that are coming up in between the rows. And they can be doing that, you know, continuously, basically.
Yeah, it kind of reminds me of the lawnmower that was basically a Roomba that we talked about. And
yeah,
it does sound like this needed to, well, they had two different machines really mentioned in this article. Because I felt like this one that the Clint Brower was kind of pushing was more like the Roomba, because they were just, I guess they found out that the weed that was particular in Kansas, because what was it? It wasn't a dill weed. I'm trying to think of what.
Hogweed, I think.
Yeah, I'm trying to find what that was. And
those invasive weeds.
Yeah, the invasive weeds, because they're. It was just kind of interesting, not completely surprising that, you know, the U.S. has different problems than England. Because they.
Black grass.
Yeah, with black grass. So, I mean, they talked about two different types of things. So, I guess the guy in the U.S. found out if you kept on clipping off this weed at the top continuously, it would eventually stop growing itself. Like, it realized that it was a futile attempt and just die off. Like, and that's kind of crazy in and of itself. Like, if you're going to regrow, like, three times, in the fourth time, your body's like, ah, fuck it. Like, that's kind of a weird plan, don't you think?
That never happened to Piccolo in Dragon Ball Z that I remember. He was always ready to go anytime you cut his arm off. But I guess plants can get worn down, or I don't know, maybe I want to say like run out of like if they run out of energy or nutrients in the immediate soil, but then that would be bad for your, as a farmer, you wouldn't want that to happen either. So maybe that's
yeah, that is definitely part of the catch-22. You definitely want the surface around your plants to be amenable to anything growing. And unfortunately, it always means that the weeds are a possibility. But yeah, I guess again, I'm not surprised that this is a major problem that they're trying to resolve. And it would help because this the Clint Brower from Kansas, that he kind of wanted to come up with a more eco-friendly version of it because he is doing like an organic farm situation. So like his farm isn't exactly huge, really, at 5,500 square foot, like compared to the more commercial farms that are used in these chemicals. So like even though he's doing things on a cleaner basis, like he's trying to get everyone to be cleaner, which is a very noble task.
Yeah, I mean that would be great if we could not use so much pesticides and fertilizer, really. So we're working on part of that at least. I like the idea of these robots. It seems like they would be running on electricity, so probably not as polluting as maybe some tractors and things like that would. So there's kind of a lot of things to like about this.
And they they're lighter and smaller, which always helps. Like it does not take as much energy to move something that's smaller, obviously.
Yeah, and another good thing is that makes it so that they're able to go out even if the field is wet and muddy. They won't necessarily have to worry about getting sunk into the ground like a tractor would if they try to go out into a muddy field. So they're able to kind of work in all kinds of conditions too. So that's nice.
That is a big upside.
I'm rooting for these little robots. I hope that, there's a lot of farmland as we drive around in the area here, Kevin. It would be nice to see some robots working the fields here one day.
Yeah, even though I want to increase the size of my garden, I do not think that it is ever going to be large enough for robots to get involved.
I was thinking more about that Husqvarna automatic lawnmower, though. I could see myself maybe looking to get one of those someday. That seems pretty cool. I'm a little doubtful about it working in our yard with kind of having it how it's set up, but
You'd almost have to teach it two different paths.
Yeah. So I don't know, but it sounds like a cool idea.
I still enjoy mowing the lawn, so I will leave it at that. But I'll tell you what, if I could get rid pawn off my weed pulling on a robot, even at this time, I would be more than happy.
I've heard that people like rent goats to pull their weeds or to eat their weeds. And I just have a lot of questions about that. Like, how do you control what the goat is going to eat? Like, I was talking to somebody, and they're like, no, they just eat the weeds. I'm like, I don't know. I don't believe that necessarily.
I would be a little bit concerned considering how much we have a lot of wildlife problems here that I've talked about on the Instagram. The deer really love to eat a lot. They like broccoli. They like pansies. They will eat flowers. Like they specifically pulled up pansies in a ring of petunias. Like they were in the middle. The pansies did not touch the petunias at all. They still look great. But they ripped two pansies out of the ground and ate the one and just kind of left the root structure.
Huh, I wonder if one is edible versus the other. Or
yeah, the pansies really taste good to them for some reason. And we had the petunias back there last year and they did not get eaten either. So this is 2 years running. The deer have not touched those. So there's something about the flavor of pansies that really draw them in.
Petunia's not on the menu, though.
Nope. Yep, the things that you learn.
I also learned something interesting about sled dogs, Kevin. I don't know.
Did you?
Yeah. You know, you shared this interesting article here. Sled dogs always were interesting to me just because it did seem to me that there was something like really different about sled dogs. But as I thought it would be cool, you know, as a kid to like, you know, have my dog pull my sled for me.
Oh, yes. There was definitely an urge to have a sled dog when I was a younger child and sledding frequently.
Yeah. It sounds really awesome, but the dog that I had was really not interested in that. And I was, at different times, I've had thoughts like, how could you convince a dog to, you know, allow himself to be strapped in there with other dogs and also, you know, work to pull something like a sled? And this article may have shed a little bit of light on that for me, Kevin.
Yeah, it's pretty bonkers that it is pretty much confirmed at this point that sled dogs have a genetic history dating back 10,000 years. That there has been very... It doesn't sound like there's been an inbreeding problem. But the genetic ancestry of today's sled dogs has very minimal very minimal traces of wolf in it, in which they found that pretty surprising, because a lot of dog breeds had bred with wolves at some point, and that this is one of the few ones that wolf had not really entered into the genetic makeup that much.
So these animals have kind of broken apart from the dog line, if you want to think about it that way, like 10,000 years ago. At least that's kind of what I was thinking about it as. So that is a pretty old breed, and I guess in my mind at least, that made some sense as to why other dogs don't really have that kind of instinct at all, or you know, propensity to do something like that, at least in my mind.
Oh. I always wondered if I got a bunch of boxers, if they would do that. Like, I feel like Cayenne would have been up for something like that if I had strapped him in.
Do you think you could have gotten them to, like, work together? Like,
That part might have been kind of tricky. As much as I love the boxer, well, they are supposed to be a working dog. So, yeah, I think that you could get them to do that. They're a little bit goofy, but they're so strong that they could definitely complete the task, and they're definitely energetic. I did always kind of want to have. I guess I didn't realize that the sled dogs are more Malamutes than they are Huskies, because Huskies are usually a bit smaller than a Malamute.
Gotcha. No, I was just looking up if there's any evidence that a boxer has ever pulled a sled. And it seems like there's some fail video here, so I don't know. It's it may not be a common occurrence.
I'm not sure how many people have multiple boxers to be pulling this off. But, I mean, I guess that is the other thing. Like, if you're going to have sled dogs, you're feeding a lot of dogs.
No, this is kind of a funny video. I just put the article in there for you, because the boxer is pulling a kid on a sled, like one of those discs.
Oh, yes.
That, the kid has looks like the leash harness in his hand. I don't know if you're looking at that video or not.
It's pulling up currently.
Okay. But the dog has other plans than to be a sled dog in this instance, shall we say.
Of course the boxer would just steal the sled and go jump into the snow. Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah, I thought you might enjoy that one.
Oh, that will definitely need to be included in the links to this show. That's awesome.
That boxer awesome. Was not down.
I will still go with they are strong enough and capable of doing so.
Yes.
But the teaching part may be a little bit harder than I'm thinking.
Yeah.
And getting back to the Siberian Huskies and the Malamutes, like evidently it is something that's kind of bred into them. Just because their genetic makeup is largely the same, which does, I guess, kind of help pass on similar traits.
Yeah, that makes sense. And I guess it makes you wonder, like, that. I don't know. I still don't understand how sled dogs started. Like, that these dogs have a natural kind of tendency to want to, you know, pull or something somehow. And then that was noticed and kind of used, or did they sort of say, hey, it'd be great if a dog would pull this sled, and then just kept trying dogs until they found some that would, you know, were willing to do it. I don't know. It boggles my mind, at least, Kevin, but that's the kind of articles I like to come across here. Make me think a little bit.
That just maybe goes back to one of our other hobby horses that sometimes people don't give people in the past credit for ingenuity to not do the work and to maybe travel a little bit more than we expected them to. Or to get around is or to, you know, work smarter, not harder, maybe. Oh, right. in today's terms. And definitely figuring out how to harness, like, a bunch of dogs together and get them to pull you around the Arctic 10,000 years ago is pretty amazing that it's kind of been around for that long.
Yeah, I agree.
You know, that's a lot of fun.
So it implies, the continuity of modern sled dogs with the sample of a dog from the context, implying sledding culture 9,500 years ago. We already suspected that dogs were the earliest domesticate. These findings imply one particular partnership of humans and dogs. They're used for traction in Arctic regions as an unbroken thread stretching back into the early Holocene. So the Holocene, I think, is the human time, modern human times. So that's pretty interesting.
Yeah. Well, I think it's time to talk about the interesting beer that we like to drink, Ken. It is definitely of the craft beer variety. We are not drinking sub-premium beers. Around
I don't
these
know.
Parts.
I could have a surprise for you.
Do you? Though.
Well,
I could not make out the can this week.
Well, this one is a
a bottle, huh?
Bottle from I don't know. Let's see. It is. Oh boy, Margaritaville Brewing Company, St. Louis, Missouri. Landshark Lager.
Oh.
This was something that I got
Jimmy Buffett beer.
Apparently.
I have tried that before. I will not try to be a complete beer snob, but I did try that once. I do not remember liking it necessarily, but it's also, I feel like it's been quite some time since I've tried that.
Yeah, I would call this a strong contender for a sub-premium beer in terms of, I think what it would be qualified for.
Oh, I can't believe that.
But I would still rate it like, heads above a White Claw hard seltzer. I can at least deal with this.
I am finishing up some of the first beers that I got on my beer run at this point. I've done as much as I could to stretch out my collections and to make sure I have a nice mix of beers from different breweries. The one that I'm finishing up tonight is the Wolf's Ridge Protégé, which is a strawberry table saison, 4.5% alcohol, 15 IBUs. On hot days like this, it's a nice beer to have. It is kind of like a better version of Natty Light Strawberry Lemonade. Except it's a real beer because it's a saison that really existed. Instead of the Natty Light, I say go get some Wolf's Ridge Protégé. They are one of the people's breweries delivering all over the state. So, yes, if your ears are in Ohio, you can get this beer. So I would say have at it. We are at Stunt Granny. I am at DeFrango11. He is at Ghoster33. Rate and review us on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, iHeartRadio, or wherever you happen to listen to us, and have a good night.
We'll see you.